The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. This week is EDU show number 2. That is part of June, Annuity Awareness Month. And I'm pretty sure it's the second one. Yeah, I remember correctly. My brain isn't fully engaged. I was on vacation last week, so it's been a minute since we've recorded a show. But in last week's show, just as a reminder, we talked about, kind of as an introduction for Annuity Awareness Month, we talked about why annuities, when used properly, might provide several powerful protections against emotional spending issues that you might have. Believe it or not, when you spend money in retirement, it can be emotional. Financial protections you might receive from an annuity. Mostly what we're referring to there is longevity protection. We find that lifetime income annuities to be a rather useful tool for longevity protection because it's an unlimited stream of money, unlimited in time. At least it's unlimited to your mortality, right? And then cognitive benefits, meaning it's not going to fix your cognitive decline, but the simplicity of having a secure income source like an annuity can be powerful in helping you in a situation of cognitive decline where you might otherwise have trouble understanding more complex financial situations and transactions. And the simplicity of a paycheck coming in every single month is much easier for you and helps protect you from being taken advantage of by the bad actors out there who might want to take your money through misleading and fraudulent claims. So today, as an extension of last time, we're going to walk through the basics of annuities, what types of annuities exist, which pretty much means fixed versus variable annuities, immediate versus deferred annuities. We're going to talk about how each of those work. We're going to talk about how you might investigate and buy them and what to watch out for if you're shopping around for an annuity. So that's where we're going to go today. We're going to ultimately have, I think, probably a couple more shows even beyond this, certainly as far as EDU shows in Annuity Awareness Month. So we'll get into some further topics, but that's our goal for today. Talk about the basic annuity types and how you might shop for or investigate annuities if you were interested. So before I bring Jim on, just one final reminder. Our goal with these annuity-focused shows during Annuity Awareness Month is to educate you to understand maybe annuities you already own or understand the world of annuities, how it may or may not benefit you in your circumstance. We're certainly not here trying to convince everyone to go out and get an annuity. An annuity is a tool, a product that is helpful for some people and not necessarily the best thing for other people. But it's they're very misunderstood. They are judged, I think, too harshly by some. They're loved too passionately by others. But understanding them can be beneficial to you in your own retirement journey, we might call it. So keep that in mind as we go through. Our intentions are just to open your eyes and give you the ammunition you need to make the best decision for yourself. So, Jim, after that long prelude, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me. And we can dive in from here, I guess.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Excellent introduction, by the way. I think it went well. Couple of things, folks. This is going to be, we're going to do kind of not nearly as deep a dive on the EDU shows as you might expect. I'm reserving that for a lot of the Q&A questions we've been getting. So I'm trying to do the basics today because I could really dive deep into it. But we only have four Annuity Awareness Month EDU shows, five if I run to July 1st, which would be another date that the show comes out. But I'm going to probably dive medium deep. I'm not saying we're going to keep you in the shallow end, but we're not going into the deep end. But we've received a lot of good questions, some that I'm going to have to do some research on. Even me kind of were like, I need to check on that. So I'm going to encourage people to keep sending annuity questions. I'm going to put your expectations in check. I'm not going to get to them all during Annuity Awareness Month. But since annuities are a form of Social Security, what we'll probably start doing at the beginning of every Q&A show is Chris will do one Social Security question, I will do one annuity question, then he and I will dive into any other questions that we so desire for that week's show. So I can slowly start getting through any other annuity questions that come in. Because sadly, Chris, we have a lot of annuity questions from last year that I've just been storing in the annuity folder. I didn't realize how many there were. They come in as an email and I drag them into this folder I created called Annuity Questions. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while on a regular show, I would go into that and pull an annuity question out. But there's a hell of a lot of questions in there.
So we need to pull from that folder more regularly.
Yes. And we're getting a lot in, which is good, and I want them to keep coming in. So I just decided we will likely, for the rest of the year, every week, do at least one annuity question. So send them in. We'll try to get through as many as we can during this month's Q&A shows, and we'll continue with annuity questions. I promise I won't just let them sit in the folder until next June. But it shows you how little we actually talk about annuities on the show. That they sat in there since last June. So if you are a new listener and you might be thinking, well, I didn't want to sign up for an annuity show, we do this every June because I feel personally annuities play a key role in retirement planning. And anybody who disputes that doesn't quite understand annuities in the way that Chris and I believe in them. And doesn't fully believe in retirement planning. You still have the accumulation mindset. For you, it's all about growth, growth, growth. It's not about simplicity and stability and guarantees. It's not about aging and having a retirement plan that ages with you, ages well, as I like to say. Does not stay complex, becomes simple. That's what retirement is all about. And too many people embrace retirement with the same investment gusto, as if that's the number one goal, is to die with the most money or the biggest bragging rights. And Chris and I look at it differently. To us, the goal should be to try to spend your money, especially on fun, but at the same time, protect that promise that the younger you is going to make to the older you. That your food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses, what we collectively call your minimum dignity floor, will be protected as best as possible. There's nothing perfect, but as best as possible with lifetime guaranteed secure income. And secure income is income that's predetermined and known. If it moves at all, it can only move up. And it's not backed by your assets, it's backed by a deep-pocketed third party. Social Security, pension, and income annuities. So that's my little tirade, my little intro. Today, what I truly want to get into is let's talk about the different types of annuities. We covered last week what an annuity is. You know, it's an insurance policy. It's not an investment. You put money into it, and in exchange, you're going to get either principal protection of those assets, if it's a fixed annuity, or a lifetime stream of guaranteed income, or to a lesser degree, some tax-deferred growth. We don't personally feel the tax deferral ability of an annuity is a reason to run out and buy one. First of all, most of you have your money in tax advantage accounts already, 401ks, IRAs, things like that. So further tax deferral is a moot point. There are times where we have specifically used annuities, though, for some tax deferral, mostly to help people qualify for ACA premium tax credits.
Right.
But outside of that, the tax deferral capabilities of an annuity, to me, are way overblown, because you're going to take a capital asset, taxed as you're, normally as a capital gain, and turn it into IRD, income with respect to a decedent. So it's never going to get a step up in basis. It's always going to be taxed as income. You cannot deduct it on your taxes if there's losses. I just don't see this tax deferral, quote unquote, advantage of an annuity being anything to write home about at all. If anything, people have far too much money in tax deferred accounts. Creating more just can create more of a future tax nightmare. Okay, so with that said, let's get into the four primary types of annuities. So when you purchase an annuity, well, let me just get to the four primary types. There's what we call immediate. There's what we call deferred. There's what we call fixed. And there's what we call variable. Immediate and deferred are the first two types that we're going to discuss with you. Every annuity you buy is going to be one of those two, immediate or deferred. And it's also going to be either fixed or variable. Or today, it can actually be what I like to jokingly call the bastard child of a one-night stand between a fixed and variable annuity, and they're called registered indexed-linked annuities. So I guess technically, Chris, there's that third
part. Maybe the
part.
Third flavor, yeah.
Right, and they're new. These annuities have only been less than a decade. These annuities have been, to the best of my knowledge, less than a decade. They are the number one selling annuity now. It doesn't surprise me. Brokers are selling them like hot potatoes. But we'll talk about RILAs. We talked about them a year or two ago, but I will get into them a little bit deeper. But right now, let's begin with what do we mean by immediate and deferred? Immediate means income, and deferred means income. Mm-hmm. Every annuity, has an income benefit built into it. We were just talking about a person in our office who we're helping who purchased an annuity in 1998. That's a relative speaking, that's a long time ago. Yet that annuity, believe it or not, folks, has an income benefit in it. Every annuity has an income benefit. Now, how they call it, what they mean by immediate or deferred, is when that income benefit starts paying. And here's what makes annuities a little bit unique, and I'll put a little star on their forehead for this, although Congress could take this away in a heartbeat. Congress doesn't mandate you turn income on from an annuity at any given time. Now, there is the forced annuitization date. We've talked about that on prior shows. But what I'm saying is, unlike an IRA, unless the annuity is inside the IRA, unlike an IRA or a TSP or a 401k, you have to take an RMD at age 73. And what is it now, Chris? 8 years from now or 7 years from now? I forget. It'll be 75. And I guarantee you, before that even happens, there will be secure 3, 4, or 5 passed that will probably mess with the RMD age again in the future. And at a given point in time, the government is going to force you to take money out of your IRA. Why do they do that, Chris?
Well, it's been sitting in there deferring taxes since the contributions were made, and they had designed them basically for these accounts to be used in your lifetime for your own retirement benefit. And so they're not going to let you withhold the tax payments to them forever. And so the way they force you to send in the tax bite, if you will, is force you to start taking money out of them and recognizing it as income, and therefore it be potentially taxed on your tax return. So they're not going to let you defer forever. They want their money eventually.
Exactly. That's why we jokingly say that every IRA is a joint account with you and your uncle.
Right.
But there's no true joint IRA. The I in IRA stands for individual. But every IRA is going to be taxed. I mean, not Roth IRAs. I'm talking traditional IRAs. Is going to be taxed, what we call always taxable accounts. Unless you never take any money out of it and die and leave it to charity, that IRA will be taxed. So we like to think of your uncle, otherwise known as Uncle Sam, as your joint owner of your of your IRA. Well, Congress has never mandated, at least right now, that annuities have RMDs. Now, they do consider annuities a retirement account, so they will impose a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Here we go with these 10% rules, Chris. So a 10% early withdrawal penalty, if you take money out of your annuity prior to age 59 and a half. Now, if the annuity is inside an IRA, IRA rules take hold. But IRAs also have that same age 59 and a half, 10% early withdrawal penalty. A non-qualified annuity, which is a annuity not inside an IRA, that will have a 10% early withdrawal penalty if you take growth out of it prior to age 59 and a half. And Chris, when you put money in an annuity, not inside an IRA, let's call it a non-qualified annuity, just annuity outside of an IRA. Maybe you bought it for this wonderful tax deferral that some agents who push annuities use as a sales pitch. So you put money in the annuity. If the money is inside the annuity, and let's just say they put $50,000 in, and it's now $75,000 and they're 58, just chosen age, younger than 59 and a half. And they think, well, I only want my $50,000 back. I don't want the growth. I don't want to pay taxes on it. Can they just take that $50,000 out?
Unfortunately, no, because of rules that rhyme with LIFO. Doesn't rhyme with LIFO, it is. Last in, first out means the last dollars into an annuity are the first dollars that come out. And since the last dollars in were the growth that the annuity company credited you with, the growth comes out first. So it's this taxable growth that comes out first before you get to your $50,000 basis that's in there. So you don't have that kind of control in an annuity where you can point it to and just take the basis.
You used to for years be able to do that.
Yeah, was it 87 or so?
I thought it was 83.
83.
Google when they changed it.
So long ago, I ran into one a couple years ago that was that old, that had the old rules, but they're very rare birds these days.
Was it 87 or 80? It was somewhere in the 80s. Chris will find it, yeah, folks. But prior to this rule change, you could put $50,000 in a non-qualified annuity. It grows to 75. Say you're 58 years old. You know there's going to be a 10% early withdrawal penalty if you take that growth out. So you would just tell the annuity company, give me my $50,000 basis. Leave the growth in there. It was a wonderful thing. But they got rid of that.
We were both wrong. It was August 14th of 1982.
82. Well, I was closest at 83.
You were closer, yes.
Okay, so that is the older rule. Back to immediate annuities. When you buy an immediate annuity, the income begins immediately, hence the name. Generally speaking, immediate means within the first 12 months. I've often said the first 13, because the month that you open it generally doesn't count. It'll come from beginning the following month. So technically it's 13. It's 12 on paper, but the income begins, quote unquote, immediately. And that is the type of annuity that is the simplest, purest, and is generally the type of annuity when Chris and I talk about an income annuity, we're generally talking about single premium immediate annuities. It is the quintessential, folks, opposite of life insurance. Life insurance, you give every year a little bit of money to the insurance company. And when you die, the insurance company is going to pay your beneficiaries a massive lump sum of money. The annuity is the total opposite. You put in a massive lump sum of money. And in exchange, you get a lifetime stream of income that will continue even if you get all your money back. Now, some people love that. Some people don't love that. So the insurance company has built a few little flavors of immediate annuities in for you to consider. Some will pay for a period certain. So it'll be life and period certain. So you can say, look, I'll put this money in and pay for the rest of my life, but I want to make sure it pays for at least 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. If I die during that period of time, I want the payments to continue until that stated time period is up. And if you sit there and do a little bit of math, you can either structure this where all your money or even more than all your money will be repaid. So that's called life with period certain. Mm-hmm. You can also get just period certain,
right?
No life to it. You can say to insurance company, hey, I'm going to give you this money, and for the next 10 years, I want you to give it back to me plus interest. There's not going to be many mortality credits. Chris will explain in a minute what mortality credits are. There's not going to be too many mortality credits in a period certain because you're not going forever. It's only going to be for 10 years. There may be structurally a few or little mortality credits in there because theoretically some people could die during that 10-year period, but the fact that the payments are going to continue during that 10-year period, it really reduces the amount of mortality credits. So period certain annuities, yes, have some mortality credits buried deep in them, but they're driven more by current interest rates, which will be locked in and guaranteed and set when you buy it. So if interest rates go up in the future, your income doesn't go up. But if interest rates go down in the future, your income doesn't go down. So we have, at our firm, used period certain annuities in the past, mostly from client direction because they're not a strategy we typically use. But for a variety of reasons that I won't get into, some people want it. And it makes perfect sense when they share it with us, and we will go ahead and assist them with that. So that's a period certain payout. You can also get what is called an installment refund or a cash refund. They kind of work in concert with each other. They're very, very similar. They're kissing cousins. What it simply means is, because again, people are worried. They come into retirement with this accumulation mindset. And they think that if they die when owning an annuity, the quote-unquote insurance company wins. And nobody wants that. Everybody vilifies and hates insurance companies. So you don't want the insurance company to win. So they say, I'm not going to buy one. Because if I die the very next day, the insurance company gets all the money. Truth be told, everybody else in the annuity pool gets the money.
Right.
Insurance company gets their money while they're doling it out to all the annuity pool members because it is an asset of theirs. It's an asset of the insurance company. We'll get into that under ratings when we talk about that either later today or next week. But the insurance company makes their money holding all the premiums that were paid in, getting interest on it, doling it out to all the members of the insurance pool and doing all the administrative tasks. While they have that money, they're earning interest on it. The annuity is guaranteed to pay a certain amount of interest. If they can earn more interest, that's how they profit off of it. And they have to profit. You don't want your insurance company not to profit, folks. But this notion that the money goes to the insurance company and they're just sitting there saying, oh, Frank died. All right. He had $800,000 in there. Let's take it's ours now. Let's give it to us. It doesn't work that way, folks. It stays in the annuity pool. Now, could the last person in that annuity pool die and there be some money left? There could be, and then the insurance company gets it. But there could also be no money left, and the insurance company has to keep paying. So it's a two-way street. They might win, quote-unquote, or they might lose, quote-unquote. But at your death, unless you're the very last person in that particular annuity pool and nobody new was ever added to the pool, they close that particular annuity offering. If that last person died and there was a dollar left, yes, the insurance company, quote unquote, won. But chances are, anybody who lives that long, the insurance company's paying you, that person at least, out of their own pocket. Okay. So what is a cash refund and an installment refund then? That's for the people who want their cake and eat it too. They want that lifetime stream of guaranteed income, but they fear, because they might live a long time, so they want it. If you're not going to live a long time, if you've just been diagnosed with some horrendous disease and the doctor says you have 5 years to live, you shouldn't be running out buying a lifetime stream of guaranteed income. But people who buy annuities want, again, the emotional benefits, the simplicity, yes, but they want that protection, that lifetime stream of guaranteed income. But at the same token, they're like, well, wait a minute, though, I want to hedge my bets. I want to make sure I get at least all of that money back. And if something happens to me, I want it to go to my beneficiaries. And that's what a cash refund or installment refund will do. Installment refund, as the name implies, continues paying the installments until all money paid into the annuity was paid out. So if you put $300,000 in but died $150,000 into it, the monthly payments, whatever they are, or quarterly or annual payments, however you have it set up, will continue until that last $150,000 is distributed to your beneficiaries. Yep. So that's an installment refund. Cash refund, as the name implies, pays your beneficiaries right away in a lump sum on day one. Technically speaking, the cash refund and the installment refund are the same. You're going to get any unreturned dollars. It's just, do you want your beneficiaries to get it all at once? Or do you want your beneficiaries to get it a little bit over their lifetime? But all money will be returned. So far, so good, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I think those are some basic terminology that everybody needs to know about annuities.
So on immediate annuities, what is the income? That was one of the questions we received. Gentlemen wanted to know, how do I factor in what I'm going to earn off of this annuity if I buy a single premium immediate annuity? We'll address this question on a future podcast Q&A show. But when you buy a single premium immediate annuity, your payments are a reflection of three things. A return of your own money, that's called a return of principal. The interest that the insurance company is guaranteeing your annuity pool members will earn on those dollars while the insurance company is doling it all out. And that interest rate is going to be based generally on the 10-year bond. It's 10-year government bond, but it's not locked into it like tape on paper. But generally speaking, it's going to key off of the 10-year bond, but it also keys off of the mortality expense, the mortality tables that the insurance company has. Yes, the expenses of the insurance company, because they have to factor in one lump sum, try to figure out What are they going to have to pay over the life of this annuity pool to manage this? There is a cost to doing this. So some of these elements increase the payments. Some of them decrease the payments. But for the most part, it's driven by a return of principal, a return of some of the interest, and an item called mortality credits. Mm-hmm. What is that, Chris?
So mortality credits are the feature in the annuity. When an insurance company is selling you an annuity, they're not selling it just to you. They're selling to tens or hundreds of thousands in a pool of people. And they have to manage expectations. They have to figure out how much they expect to pay out over the life of all these annuities. And that's a function of how long people are going to live. And while it's impossible for an insurance company to predict how long one person will live, when they're talking about tens of or hundreds of thousands of people together as a group, they can very accurately actually predict how many in that group are going to pass away each and every year, so they can actually manage that pool of people quite easily. And what they will do is they will take their estimates of how many people are going to die sooner than average, and the dollars they would have left behind in the pool because they didn't receive income for an extended period of time. They allocate that to pay people who live longer than average. And so when they give you a quote for an annuity, they're going to make you a payment promise that is based on the three factors Jim just mentioned: return of the money that you put in, the interest crediting that they're going to apply to the pool, and then mortality credits. Essentially, if you are willing to share leftover money with the pool, if you die early, you'll be rewarded with higher payments lifetime because you get the benefit of that if you happen to be one who lives longer than average. And they actually figure this all out, not after it happens. They don't wait and see people pass away and then say, okay, everybody gets a boost in their income because these 14 people died this year. They actually use their predictive capabilities, their statistical efforts, actuaries in the insurance company's language, a specialty area of statistical analysis, to predict how many people are going to pass away each year and what's the average life expectancy of the pool. And they use that to actually decide on the income promise that they're going to make to you in exchange for you buying the annuity, paying your premium.
Okay, so mortality credits are a very, very important element of annuities, single premium immediate annuities. And they're one of the reasons you can't, generally speaking, dollar for dollar, you're going to put significantly less money into an annuity than you would to an investment account, because an investment account does not have the benefit of mortality credits. Mortality credits are factored in at the beginning of the process, not at the end of the process. Single premium immediate annuities are kind of the answer to tontines, which were very common in medieval ages and even afterwards. I think most countries have outlawed them. The United States outlawed them because of the moral hazards they propose. I'm not sure if propose is the correct words. They pose, not
promote.
Propose. They
yeah.
pose. Mm-hmm. A tontine is when you give, years ago, many hundreds of years ago, you would give money to usually a king or some other type of lordship. And it would be very wealthy people who did this. And the king would say, hey, I will keep paying all of you dukes and lords and everybody who gave me some of this money so I can do whatever it is I want to do with it. And you're going to get a set amount every year, and you split it amongst yourselves. And as people die, the survivors get to get more and more and more, and the last right. person alive in the tontine gets it all until he dies. And then any money that's not returned stays with the king. Many countries, and again, the United States, I think the United States in the 20s outlawed them, so a little over 100 years ago. And they did it because of more, I could be wrong in the 20s, folks. It might have been in the 1800s. I'll research when U.S. outlawed it. Chris can Google it. When did the U.S. outlaw tontines? But the thing with mortality credits, which is similar, SPIAs were the answer to the abolishment of tontines. And the government felt it was okay because you're still kind of sharing in a pool of other decedents. It's just that they said, hey, the insurance company has to figure this all out on day one when you establish this annuity pool. You have to keep track of your own mortality tables. You're going to have to try to estimate how many people every year are going to die. And you let everybody from day one share in the mortality credits. We're trying to remove this moral hazard of people going out and murdering other annuity pool members. Now, this probably was a very real thing in medieval ages when maybe there was only 10, 12, 15 members of the Tontine. Everybody kind of knew who was in there and have to be watching your back walking home on a dark night. It's pretty hard in modern times when you don't know who's in your annuity pool and you're going to really start going, and it could be hundreds of thousands of people in there, and the murder of one or two of them isn't going to impact the income at all. Maybe there is a push by many people to bring Tontines back. I don't know if they'll come back, but they really do reward healthy people who live a long time, obviously. But single premium immediate annuities were kind of born out of that Tontine world. And to placate the government, they have to estimate on day one about how many people are going to die every single year. They don't know who, but they can tell you how many. How much money of theirs it can stay in the pool. It doesn't go to the insurance company, folks. How much of that money can stay into the pool? How much can be doled out? And how can we get this in a perfect world to be worth exactly zero the same year that the last person dies? Now, it's never going to work out that way, but that's what they're shooting for. And if you have a highly rated, well-funded insurance company, should that annuity pool run out and there's still hundreds, if not thousands, of annuity pool members alive, then the insurance company is paying them from their own reserves. And that's why having a highly rated insurance company is very important. Because if you do have longevity, it's quite possible. You'll never know. They don't send you a letter and say, hey, just so you know, your annuity pool ran out. You still haven't died yet. So we're going to continue paying you, but this money's coming from us. We just want you to feel bad for us. No, they're not going to send you a letter like that. So you'll never know if your check is being funded by them or the annuity pool, theoretically. Did you find when Tontines were outlawed in the U.S.?
Yes, in the United States, it was 1906.
06. Okay, I thought it was the 20s. I was wrong. So you can see they were around for quite a while, folks, Tontines. Single premium immediate annuities were what were born from Tontines. And I shared with you, I used to watch that show on HBO. Gosh, I can't remember it, but it's kind of like The Sopranos set in the 1920s. God, I can't remember the name of the show now. Boardwalk Empire. Mm-hmm. And there was a scene towards the end when it was all wrapping up and coming to its climactic and very violent ending. One of the main stars gave an insurance policy to his girlfriend, wasn't his wife, gave it to his girlfriend. And they showed the front of the policy and it said single premium immediate annuity on it, or immediate annuity. I think it just said immediate annuity. And because there's no Social Security in the 1920s, folks. And what this gangster was saying to his little love child there was, hey, if something happens to me, I got you covered, because this is going to pay you money for the rest of your life. I should have saved that snippet from the show, because that's what an annuity is. But even in the 1920s, so that's not too long after Tontines went away, they already had immediate annuities coming out, which were smoothing out the mortality credits. Okay, and then shortly thereafter, the guy got blown up. So it was really good that he got this for his love child. Okay, so that's an immediate annuity. Deferred annuity. This can get confusing. Because, Chris, a deferred annuity, deferred income annuity sound pretty much the same thing, don't they?
A little bit. So it's just technicality, really. that that definition of a deferred versus immediate is when the income turns on. A deferred annuity simply is longer than that 1 year, which would classify it as an immediate annuity.
Correct. But every annuity is a deferred annuity, but not every deferred annuity is a deferred income annuity. Huh? Okay, folks. Every annuity is a deferred annuity. Even a single premium immediate annuity is technically a deferred annuity.
Might only be a few days.
In a sense, you can delay it for 12 months. So you're delaying it. But I think it's important to acknowledge something that we didn't. And we use noun and verb. When you buy a single premium immediate annuity, you're buying a verb, not a noun. What do I mean by that? An annuity is a noun. It's just an insurance contract between you and an insurance company. Annuitization is the verb. That is when you have willfully given up your money. You cannot get it back. You've given up your money. And in exchange, you are going to receive a lifetime stream of guaranteed income. The difficulty that people have in understanding this, when we say noun and a verb, a deferred annuity is a noun. A deferred income annuity is a verb. If you buy a deferred income annuity, you have annuitized. You have freely told the insurance company, here is my pool of money. I don't want it back. I want a lifetime stream of income. If you begin that income within 12 months of buying it, it's called a single premium immediate annuity. If you have that income turned on after 12 months, 14 months, 14 years, it's technically called a deferred income annuity. Notice it doesn't have an S before it. There's no single premium deferred income annuity. Most deferred income annuities allow additional deposits in. And each deposit in will be, and the income it generates will be based on your age and current interest rates on the day you put the money in. Prior deposits, the interest rate is locked in. Again, I told you that when you put the money in, the interest rate is locked. But with a deferred income annuity, it's annuitized. You can only get income out, but they allow the continual deposit of dollars into the policy. People have, and we have it in our practice with two people, and I've been doing this 26 years, so it shows you how often we use them for this strategy. But two people who did not, for a variety of reasons, have any type of pension or Social Security benefit, but they were working. And they opened these annuities and started treating them as their lifetime stream of guaranteed income. And they kept putting money in on a regular basis and still to this day are. And then in the future, because again, they have no Social Security and they have no pension, they will turn it on and have something at least that's lifetime and guaranteed. They still also have investment accounts as well, but they wanted to set something up to give them some lifetime stream of income. So a deferred income annuity is a true verb. They're not very popular. And except for the situation that I just described, and a couple of times when people that we work with have overruled Chris and I, we generally don't favor them because of this one thing. I pretty much know right now it's not raining. And I know in 4 hours it's not going to be raining. I don't know in 4 days if it will be raining. And I have no idea 4 years from now if it's going to be raining on this particular day. The further out something goes, the less sure we are of what's going to happen. And Chris and I, well, I'll let him explain it. With that in line, Chris, take it away. I know you know where I'm going mm-hmm. with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you annuitize, that is quite a commitment. It's like getting married, right? You're attaching yourself to that insurance company.
But you can't get divorced like you can with
sure,
a marriage.
Sure, correct.
You're so stuck with that annuity.
You're stuck. But in the insurance company's favor, they disclose in the contract exactly what you're going to get, so you know. Not all marriages evolve that same way, right? So, but it's a connection. It's a relationship you now have, and you're committing to that. And life changes. If it then makes you regret having gotten it, you're stuck in there. There is no divorce, like Jim mentioned. So we tend to not favor such a commitment until you are highly confident that the relationship is good for you. And so if the need that you have for additional income is not immediate, we prefer to not say, well, our prediction is that I will need it in 10 years and 15 years. So I'm going to enter into this binding relationship now in anticipation. My projection was correct. We don't like that as much as holding on to your dollars until the 10 years or maybe 15 years evolves. And then you confirm, yes, I do in fact want this relationship with the insurance company. I've now gone through all the years of uncertainty of how things would turn out. I'm now arrived at my destination where I need the income. And maybe I was perfectly right, but a lot of times you're going to be, in a different situation than you predicted. And maybe the income is not in your best interest at that time. You'd much prefer to have just the liquid asset balance instead. And you'd have that ability to have that if you hadn't annuitized 10 or 15 years prior. So we generally don't like to pull the trigger on that annuitization relationship until we sometimes call the last minute, but at least until you're highly confident. And in my eyes, that usually means mid 70s or so for most people. There can be certainly arguments for earlier or later than that, but by the time you're in your mid 70s, you kind of now have seen how retirement is going, how your accounts have done since you retired maybe 10 or 15 years ago, how your situation is with the expenses and where your living situation is and all this kind of stuff, how your health is holding up. You just have a lot more information to educate you, to inform your decision on whether this relationship with the insurance company makes sense for you or not. That's why we prefer to defer holding on to your own dollars and not a deferred income annuity commitment. So either in a deferred annuity or traditional investments instead, until you get to the point of needing the income, and then do more of an immediate income annuity solution.
Thank you. Excellent. Now, we are asked several times on the podcast throughout the year, we've had these questions on Q&A shows where people want to buy that deferred income annuity. Mm-hmm. And they're wondering, why don't we like it? Well, that's why. But we also say when we answer those questions, you do what you feel best. And if you feel comfortable and confident with your projections, your potential future income shortage, your health today, and as some podcast listeners have shared with us, they just like that peace of mind. They just want to scratch that checkbox off their list of things to worry about. We have nothing against people who want to buy one now for anticipated use in the future. It's just not our preferred approach.
Right.
Okay, so remember I said every annuity is a deferred annuity, but not every deferred annuity is a deferred income annuity. Now you know why. Not every annuity is a verb. There's many that are a noun. And they're all deferred annuities. You are deferring the income. That's all it means. Immediate annuity, I'm taking the income immediately. Or 12 months later, but it's still immediate in the insurance world. Immediate or deferred. Just know the difference. One's a noun, one's a verb. So let's talk about the noun now, which is what I would say 99% of all annuities sold are probably nouns, not verbs. They don't become a verb until you annuitize. And some people never annuitize for a variety of reasons. So let's talk about the noun. All noun annuities are deferred annuities. You're not taking the income. So by default, it's deferred. And here's where the two, now three, platforms of deferred annuities come into play. Remember I shared with you folks last week, in addition to the lifetime stream of guaranteed income and the tax deferral, which I am not excited about, as you know, there is a additional insurance protection. The tax deferral is not insurance protection. It's just a feature of annuities. The lifetime stream of guaranteed income, that's an insurance protection. But 100% principal protection is also an insurance protection. So all annuities are deferred annuities. Then they will be built on one of three platforms. The first is a fixed platform. And it will give you the 100% principal protection. The most common fixed deferred annuity are MYGAs, M-Y-G-A, multi-year guaranteed annuity. It's kind of the insurance company's answer to a CD without the FDIC insurance, of course. But you give an insurance company a pool of money, they will guarantee you a certain amount of interest to grow every year, compounded inside the annuity for that stated number of years. And when those years are over, you don't have to close the MYGA if you don't want to, but the insurance company will reset when the MYGA matures and it will establish a new interest rate based on current rates. But for the stated number of years when you buy it, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years are the most popular that we use at our firm, with 3 years pretty much being where a lot of the ones we use fall into. You can lock a MYGA up for 10 years. I would imagine you can go even longer, but I haven't seen any of those. Most that I see is out 10 years. But I don't want to lock people's money up, and you don't want to lock your money up for 10 years. So 3 years, 4 years, 5 years seem to be the most common. When you buy a fixed annuity, that will give you 100% principal protection, hence the name, fixed. In addition to MYGAs, there's annual renewable fixed annuity. They're not that popular. That's why MYGAs came out. And on that annuity, you were told what you would get for the first year, but you had no idea what you were going to get in year two, year three, year four, year five. And you had to lock your money up for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, whichever one you bought. But you only knew what you were going to get in year one. Those didn't sell too good. I mean, seriously. So the insurance company came out and says, well, yeah, no one's buying these damn things. Well, let's just guarantee the interest rate for a set number of years. I bet you they'd be more popular. And they are. But you can occasionally find these annual deferred annuities that reset the interest rate every year, even though you're still going to have this long penalty period. Then we can get into what are called variable annuities. Remember, this is still a noun. You're putting money in. You might be saying, why am I putting money into this then? Because you want it to grow. Now, if it's inside an IRA, it's already growing tax deferred. So you better be buying this deferred annuity for another reason besides growth. And that's where this tax deferral really started to cause issues. And what do I mean by that? For years, up until I've been involved in this industry since the 1990s, and I can remember when I first started in the industry, annuities were pretty much sold outside of IRAs, and they were sold for tax deferral. So they weren't that popular, were they, Chris? Because where's most people's money?
Most people's money's in their retirement accounts.
And if all your money is in your retirement account, there's got to be another reason to buy an annuity than tax deferral. Well, there's growth potential. But the fees on variable annuities were so high, you pretty much could grow it better outside of the annuity. So the insurance company needed to add some pizzazz to their variable annuities, because there are expensive fees with variable annuities, as we'll get into. They wanted a growth product. They wanted to appeal at first to people who had money outside of IRAs. Hey, put your money in this annuity. We can grow it for you. And you don't have to pay taxes. And you can rebalance among all these subaccounts. They don't call them mutual funds. They look like a mutual fund, talk like a mutual fund, act like a mutual fund, but they're called subaccounts. You can invest in all these different subaccounts and reallocate amongst them. And you don't have to worry about capital gains taxes or anything, because you're in this annuity wrapper. And that's what they used to sell them on. But they realized all the oomph, all the money is inside IRAs. So if we put an annuity, a variable annuity, inside an IRA, we can get growth, yes. But where's the tax deferral advantage? It's lost. And the regulators, especially FINRA, which used to at the time be called the NASD, National Association of Securities Dealers, now it's called the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA. But NASD and the SEC were looking at this happening way back when I was just getting involved in this and saying, hey, wait a minute. You're putting these annuities with, you're pushing this tax deferral. Now you're trying to put them inside IRAs. And you're putting them inside IRAs and you're saying it's because of the growth potential. But with all the fees these damn things have, client would be better off not owning the annuity inside the IRA, and they can get the mutual fund equivalent of the subaccount for a lot lower fee. Remember, this is going back into the 90s. ETFs weren't even around then. So the industry was between a rock and a hard place here. And the regulators were coming down on them, because variable annuities were the in thing back then. They were the hot commodity in thing. So they came out with a death benefit. They said, well, there is another reason why you would want this annuity. It's not just for the lifetime stream of guaranteed income. And it's certainly not for principal protection, because this is a variable annuity. We do not give principal protection. I just got an email question today from someone who said they bought a variable annuity for the principal protection. Well, that was their first mistake. Variable annuities do not give principal protection. That's why they're called variable. Your money can go up, it can go down. During the deferral phase of an annuity, you're trying to grow it. So when you turn the income on, there's more money in it and you get more income. That, in theory, is what you're trying to do. So the variable annuity industry came out with a death benefit and said, hey, there's another insurance benefit you can get, not just a lifetime stream of future guaranteed income. If you die before turning the income on and you have absolutely terrible luck and you die and your account is worth less than what you put in it, because the market reduced its value and our exceedingly high fees reduced the value, we're going to make your beneficiary whole. And that is how the insurance companies kind of put FINRA and the SEC on ice, by saying, hey, there is another insurance benefit they're getting. They're getting a death benefit. And that was a big thing. And I remember once, I won't say famous, Susie Orman, I knew I could get it this time. I always forget her name. She had a case, I think it was a live show she was doing. Don't quote me on that. Anyways, I believe it was the 2000, 2001, 2002 market crash. I don't think it was the 2008 one, but it might have been. Anyway, she was never a fan of annuities at all. And I support a lot of people who aren't fans of annuities when they're talking about fixed indexed annuities, variable annuities, and even these new RILA annuities. I'm not fans of them. Single premium median annuities, I'm a fan of. Anyway, somebody got her on a live call, and it was the timing was perfect. They inherited an annuity from someone, I think their father, but don't quote me on that, where they ended up getting from the insurance company more than what the annuity was worth because of the death benefit, because the gentleman passed away when the market was cratering. And she just wanted to point that out to her and say, you know, you keep bashing these, but they worked well for me. So the insurance part of it, the enhanced death benefit, excuse me, the basic death benefit of paying out more than, what you put in if you die when it's worth less, is a viable product, is a viable reason. But it really wasn't enough of a reason to force people or to compel people to buy them. Because generally speaking, Chris, markets go up, right?
Generally, on average, they do.
So, you know, 5, 8, 10, 12 years into this annuity, your account balance is worth hopefully substantially more than what you ever put in for it. And the death benefit is kind of moot, don't you believe? Don't you think?
Yeah, or moot. Mm-hmm.
That's what I said, right?
You said mute. That's a pet peeve.
Whatever. Well, I muted the mute.
There you go.
So the insurance company said to themselves, well, gee, we got to do something about this because people aren't keeping them. They're thinking, well, what's the advantage? Well, all these fees I'm paying on these damn things. My account is so much above what I ever put in. It's not worth the death benefit anymore. There's no way it's going to drop that much. So they came out with what are called enhanced death benefits on variable annuities. And the enhanced death benefit, as the name implies, will generally guarantee that at every high water mark, your death benefit steps up to that. So if you put in $100,000 and it rises, the high water mark is usually measured every anniversary. They call it the anniversary value, not necessarily high water mark. So every anniversary, they'll look, oh, you put in 100 on the one-year anniversary, it's worth 115. That becomes your new death benefit. But then if the account balance dropped below that, your locked-in balance is 115. That's what they're going to insure, not your initial 100,000. So your death benefit has a way to grow, assuming, of course, that your account balance continues to reach new highs on the anniversary date. Could reach new highs during the year, but they really look on the anniversary date. So that was an enhanced death benefit. And then they went one step further. And not only did they have the enhanced death benefit, they put a guaranteed minimum growth rate on the death benefit, usually for a stated number of years. Hey, we're going to grow it at 5% for the first 10 years or something like that. And that'll compound off of the highest anniversary value or the compounded growth of the death benefit. So they threw all of their oomph into the death benefit, and variable annuities continued to do well until they didn't. And it was because the death benefit only goes so far. What good is the death benefit? Its own name implies one key element, Chris. What's that?
Well, the event that triggers it is not what we all seek.
Right. You're dead. So they came out with living benefits, and they came out with living benefits strongly around 2004, 5, 6. And this ignited a variable annuity war. And the living benefits still exist to this day, not nearly as good as they were when they first came out. But to entice people to buy them inside an IRA, where all the money is, they had to have something for an annuity salesman to wave in front of somebody, like a lure in front of a fish. And that was this living benefit. That, hey, you don't got to die to get this benefit. You can get this benefit if you live. I'm not going to walk through all the different iterations of it. Today, it's generally a withdrawal percentage of your account balance. And that's what the insurance company would say. And they usually age band it. What does that mean, Chris?
That means that the percentage that you're allowed to receive or withdraw increases as you hit certain ages, usually 5-year increments, 60, 65, 70, 75, etc. So the percentage promised to you actually changes, increases as you age.
And it's all spelled out to you in the contract. Today, it's generally a 5, 6, 7% withdrawal percentage from the account balance. So they would say to you, if you open this and you keep it till age 60, you between 60 and 65, we'll give you this much of the account balance. If you wait to 65 to 70, you get that much. Some annuities did it yearly. At 61, you get this. 62, you get this. 63, you would get this. And as soon as you turn the income on, the amount you can withdraw from that annuity was locked in by the contract. And you were guaranteed to be able to withdraw whatever that percentage of your account balance was. And those are called living benefits. We're going to dive much deeper into living benefits next week. On the variable annuity platform, though, your account balance can go up, your account balance can go down. That is key to remember. You get to invest it in subaccounts that look, talk, and act like a mutual fund. They may even have the same name of mutual funds that you're used to seeing, but they are not mutual funds. They are called sub-accounts. They might be managed by the fund company and bear its name, but they have a fee structure totally different than their retail mutual fund counterpart. And that fee structure is generally higher. Because the sub-accounts inside a variable annuity are generally there because they pay the insurance company to be there. It's called cost sharing or revenue sharing, really. So the insurance company, the sub-account advisor is withdrawing dollars from your account, the quote-unquote management fee, and they're going to pay the insurance company a certain amount of that. It's all disclosed to you in your contract. You never read it, but it's in the contract. So those sub-accounts aren't generally there because they're good. They are generally there because they pay to be there. Now, I have seen some annuities with really terrible sub-accounts, other annuities with a couple of pretty good investment options, but not many. But most sub-accounts are and most of the providers are just mid-tier, low-rate asset managers. But occasionally you'll find some good ones. You'll occasionally find a Vanguard fund in them. Vanguard does not pay and never pays to be a listed sub-account inside a variable annuity. But a couple will have Vanguard accounts in there. So you got to pay attention to these sub-accounts and the fees that you're paying. And recognize there better be another reason to buy that variable annuity than the sub-accounts. Because pretty much any sub-account in there, you can get on your own a hell of a lot cheaper. Because it'll be in the mutual fund wrapper. ETFs do not exist inside variable annuities right now. So only mutual funds do. But you'll be able to get those mutual funds or sub-accounts. You can get the mutual fund equivalent of the sub-account outside of the annuity. So there better be a better bell and whistle, a death benefit, a living benefit, or both, that is encouraging you to buy that variable annuity. Because the fees of variable annuities, especially broker-sold ones, where the broker has to be sold, you cannot get a variable annuity from an insurance agent. You have to get it from a stockbroker. who's going to be registered with FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. They're called a registered rep, but they're really stockbrokers. Insurance agents can sell a fixed annuity, but a stockbroker sells a variable annuity. He or she must also be insurance licensed, so they must have an insurance license to sell annuities, period. But they also need that brokerage license to sell a variable annuity because it is an investment. And they generally pay a commission. And the commission is outrageously high. They're probably getting 5 to 8% with the industry standard being about 6 or 7% of what you put in. So they are pushed a lot for the commission. For better or worse, that's how variable annuities are sold. Now, there are newer ones we'll talk about later when we talk about the distribution, not today, but probably next week. And these are fee-based variable annuities. And we'll talk a little bit about them. They don't have a lot of the high fees that a traditional variable annuity will have. The variable annuity will have an M&E fee, which stands for mortality and expense. That's the expense of the annuity. That's usually about 1 to about 1.7%. And a lot of that fee goes to the broker on an annual basis or to the brokerage house. So there's the M&E fee. There can be a rider fee, the living benefit and the enhanced death benefit, that's not free. Basic death benefit is free. That's you die and there's less in there than when you were alive. No step up, no guaranteed growth, no nothing. That's a basic one that's generally quote unquote free. But any of the other enhanced death benefits I spoke of or any income benefit, you generally pay extra for it. On the death benefit side, about 20 basis points to 50 basis points. And on the income benefit side, it's generally 100 basis points. You generally see a 1% additional fee, sometimes a little bit higher, sometimes a little bit lower. But you start adding all these fees together, the death benefit fee, the living benefit fee, the investment fee, the M&E fee. Variable annuities, at least on the broker sold standpoint, 3 to 4% fees. It's outrageous. I don't know why people buy those damn things, but they're out there. It's important you know it. And then, of course, as we wrap up, there is the final, which is the fixed annuity, which gives you that 100% principal protection, pays a fixed amount of interest for a stated period of time, 1 year or multiple years, making it a MIGA. And the variable annuity that can go up, it can go down. It has investment options in there. Well, they were sitting around a bar one night and they got hammered. And they went home together. And the next thing you know, the RILA came out of this little union. The union didn't last long, but the RILA is here. Registered Indexed Linked Annuity. You've probably heard about them, or you've probably been pushed them. They also go by the name buffered annuity. Gee, where have you heard that word buffer, Chris?
Well, most recently we've talked about buffered ETFs, where they have a downside buffer of some kind attached to them.
The RILA is the insurance company's answer to buffered ETFs. So a RILA will have some fixed component to it if you want. You can put some of your money in. It's a deferred annuity. You can put some of your money in a fixed account, paying a fixed guaranteed amount of interest. Or you can put some money in an investment account with no downside protection. Or you can put some money in a buffer option. 10%, 20% downside buffer, usually tied to an index like the S&P 500 or something like that. And they work very similar to a buffered ETF. Now, we'll explain, because that was one of our questions. What's the difference between a RILA and a buffered ETF? We'll talk about that on another show. I could dedicate two or three shows to RILAs. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by them, but I don't like them. And it really still comes down to the illiquidity of these products. You have to lock your money up for 5, 7, 10 years. I can put you in a buffered ETF that can give you 100% buffered protection, or 10%, or 20%, or 30%. But I can get you in and out of it whenever you want. I like that liquidity. You can get higher cap rates inside a RILA. I'll concede that, because you're locking your money up for a longer period of time. The insurance company has to reward you, and nobody would buy them. But RILAs are the number one growing annuity out there. And they're kind of, and when I say they're a one-night stand between a fixed annuity and a variable annuity, they're really a one-night stand between a fixed indexed annuity and a RILA annuity. So next week, I'm going to dive into what is a fixed indexed annuity and what is a RILA, which is the son or daughter of that fixed indexed annuity who slept with a variable annuity. Because it truly is a merging of the potential growth of a variable annuity with the potential loss of a variable annuity, but the guarantees of a fixed annuity. They murfed the two of them, or merged the two of them, into this registered indexed linked annuity. RILA for short. I didn't come up with the name of it. But they often go by buffered annuities. And they truly do compete against buffered ETFs. Yep. So we'll dive deeper next week into this union, what a RILA is, what a fixed indexed annuity is, and where would they fit into a retirement plan. I'm not against, I think my biggest beef with both fixed indexed annuities and RILA annuities is the fact that you have to lock your money up. Yeah. And I don't like doing that. That's why I have a hard time with them. But there's a few other things I don't like about them. And I will openly share that next week. And there's some things I do like about them. I concede the cap rates are higher, which they should be. If they weren't, if the cap rates were lower than what you could get on a completely liquid buffered ETF, who would ever buy one of those annuity products is beyond me. Mm-hmm. The insurance company has to appeal to people by giving them this higher, at least year one, cap rate. But you lock your money up. And remember, we do retirement planning. If you are in the accumulation phase, the penalty period, the lockup period, that may not bother you. And at which point, you may say, you know what, Jim, I get it. I have to lock my money up for 10 years in this RILA. But I'm not retiring for 15. I am going to put it in the RILA because I can get 20% higher cap rate than I'm making that number up. 20% higher cap rate than I can in the buffered ETF. Mm-hmm. I don't need that liquidity feature right now. I'm okay locking it up. I have no problem with that. But as a retirement planner, where 99% of our clients are retired, or damn close to retired, I have a hard time locking their money up. If Chris and I have a hard time telling people to buy a deferred income annuity because we don't know what the future's going to bring, how can I tell a retiree, lock up these dollars for 10 years? I have a hard time doing that because I don't know what the retiree's future is going to bring. So we'll dive into that next week. Fixed index annuities, RILAs, how do they work, the differences between them, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, show number two for Annuity Awareness Month, at least the EDU show. Got some Q&A coming up here in the very next show. We'll record that in a few days. But we want to thank everybody. If you do want to send in your own questions for a Q&A show consideration, send those directly to Jim. Jim@jimhelps.com is the email address. Put in the subject line that it's a question for the podcast. And if you're hoping to maybe get it in during Annuity Awareness Month, make sure annuity is in the subject line. Can't guarantee it. We have a lot of annuity questions. But if you have a particularly interesting one and timely, you never know. We might squeeze it in while we're doing our annuity focus this month. But we really appreciate everybody listening and sending in your questions. And thanks a lot, Jim. You and I will talk soon. But everybody stay safe, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.